Locked On NBA, the biggest stories, the local experts. Every Monday, we dig into the biggest stories in the NBA with the Locked On Podcast Network hosts. Today, we'll stop in Brooklyn to talk with Josh Bass of Locked On Nets about the Nets looking to the future, about them not tanking, and about the potential rise of D'Angelo Russell. We'll go to Milwaukee to speak with Eric Name of Locked On Bucks about a couple of signings in Milwaukee, including Shabazz Muhammad returning and Christian Wood, and the effect of Brook Lopez on the existing stars in Milwaukee. And lastly, we'll go to Denver to speak with Adam Mares of Locked On Nuggets about the recent update on Michael Porter Jr.'s back surgery and what we can potentially expect from a guy who was thought to be maybe the number one pick in the draft before everything went horribly wrong last season. It's all coming up. The biggest stories with the local experts on Locked On NBA.
Are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hi guys, and welcome back to another Monday edition of Locked On NBA. I'm your Monday host, Josh Lloyd. I'm also the host of the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast, and I am the lead analyst at basketballmonster.com. So go check me out over on that podcast as well, and find me on Twitter at redrock_beeble. We've still got content coming to you. It's the dead period of the NBA, but there's still plenty of interesting things right across the NBA landscape. So let's get to it. Now we bring in the host, or one of the hosts, of the Locked On Nets podcast. Josh Bass is here to talk about a team who's been struggling. I think that's a fair way of putting it over the last couple of seasons. But things look to be on the upswing, a really solid offseason for the Brooklyn Nets. And we've had a few quotes recently come out of Brooklyn, especially one of them, which I want to touch on with you early here, Josh, is Kenny Atkinson saying that the Nets aren't even discussing tanking. This is the first year they've got their draft pick after all those Celtics deals, but they are focused on building a winning team. And there is a chance with, of course, Cleveland potentially dropping out of the playoffs, that a spot is opening up in the Eastern Conference, and they're looking forward to that instead of looking for that draft pick.
Yeah, no, it's definitely an interesting strategy they're going with. And I think oftentimes everyone on NBA Twitter kind of gets very into the idea of tanking for draft picks and doing what Philly did and coming out with a couple stars like Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. But for a franchise like the Nets that's been struggling as long as they have, and really it's been a tumultuous last probably 5 or 6 years for us, we need to see wins. So even though it might not be the best long-term strategy, I do like the idea they're going with, hey, we're going to empower our young players, see if anyone develops into a star, hopefully win some games in the process. And then if that doesn't happen, then we kind of look to break it down.
And they're also a team that's not going to be relying on rookie players this season. They do bring in two rookies to their roster in Jana Musa and Rodion Skurics, which we'll talk about Musa a little bit later. But we're talking about guys who are in their second, third, fourth season, who are going to be the main fifth season, main core of this team. So that is the time when they should be pushing and looking to develop. We're not talking about a whole bunch of first and second year guys on this team. So I do think it makes sense. I know they do have that draft pick, but they have been able to, through a number of trades through this offseason, develop a stash of other picks in the coming seasons, a couple other first rounders, second round picks. They already got their first round of this one through that trade last year with Damari Carroll. There's veterans mixed in with Carroll, with Kenneth Faried coming across, Jared Dudley there to provide some of that leadership. And do you think that, Josh, that playoff spot, is that a goal that this team should be looking at, or are they looking at that?
Yeah, I think they're definitely going to be looking at the 7 or 8 seed, and whether they get there is another question, but it's a reasonable goal to have. I mean, this is a team that struggled last year with depth. They bring in guys like Shabazz Napier, Ed Davis, even veterans like Jared Dudley, who can help out. So I think whether they make the playoffs or not, I'm assuming they're going to come up short, but I think 34, 35, 36 wins is definitely in question. It's something that they can achieve. And looking at this roster, it is pretty unique, as you mentioned, because they do have a lot of veterans, but for the most part, it's a bunch of young guys, and it's rare to see a team that young also have pretty good depth. The problem is that they don't have any star-like talent, which I'm not sure is a recipe for success in this league, because you need stars to win games, but they'll be in a lot of games. So looking at the 8 seed's a reasonable goal.
That's a really good segue, you know, intentional or not, into D'Angelo Russell, who the word out of Brooklyn is that they are looking to him to have that star type breakout this season. Of course, last year it was pretty much ruined by a knee injury. But when he did return at the end of the season, they pushed him back into the starting lineup. They demoted Spencer Dinwiddie, who'd been really strong for them throughout the season, to the backup role. And all indications, Josh, coming out of Brooklyn is that Russell is going to be the starter, and he is going to be the guy they're looking at to be their guy, to be their face of the franchise. And it's a key season for him in his fourth year as he looks after this to get that extension heading into restricted free agency. But there's some big talk coming out of the Nets about D'Angelo Russell for this coming year.
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of the face in franchise for face of the franchise for better or worse. I mean, he being the second overall pick in the draft, he has the draft pedigree that no one else on the Nets really does. Obviously, a tumultuous first two seasons in LA, and he really hasn't gotten better in any of his 3 years. And I don't know how many players have kind of emerged into superstar potential without making significant improvements. Even a guy like Victor Oladipo, who took a huge leap this year, he still made incremental improvements in his first few seasons with the Magic. So D'Angelo Russell is a huge question mark for me, but given the assets the Nets traded to get him, being the Kyle Kuzma pick and also Brook Lopez, who was a team stalwart for years, they have to give him the opportunity to see what he can do. And hopefully he does become that kind of lead ball handler, star-like player. I just don't necessarily see it because he doesn't have the physical attributes to really make that kind of impact.
They're obviously massively high on him, and it is a key year, but I think it feels like that with D'Angelo Russell, it's going to be if he can take that step forward, then they can push towards those playoffs. They're obviously a little bit away from that now. What do you think that does for a team that did have success, you know, with Spencer Dinwiddie running things for big stretches of last season? What does it do for maybe not necessarily morale, because D'Angelo hasn't necessarily been always credited as being the greatest teammate? Do you think there's any concern there that Russell comes in and is not necessarily anointed as the guy, but maybe is handed stuff when his performance may not have deserved that over the last couple of seasons?
Yeah, that's a great point. But I think at the end of the day, all these guys are pros, and they understand that when you have someone picked as highly as he was, you have to give him the opportunity. And it's not like he came in right away after the injury and immediately got his starting spot back. It did take a while. And even though his play didn't necessarily warrant maybe getting swapped in for Spencer Dinwiddie, Dinwiddie did fall off at the end of the year, and he wasn't able to keep up his really hot start. So I think there was kind of an impetus for Kenny Atkinson to make that switch. And it's not like he's just getting pampered day in and day out by the staff. They are making him work for it, and they do put a lot of pressure on him. Now it's up to him to live up to it, but I don't really see any locker room concerns on the horizon.
Well, that's good to hear, because you know, that's one of those things that can derail a team pretty quickly. Look, before his injury, though, last season, Russell was averaging 21 points a game in only 28 minutes, almost 6 assists. He was shooting 46% from the field, so he was playing well. It's only a 12-game sample size, but the signs were there that he was able to, you know, take that step forward and perhaps become that guy that, you know, so many thought he could be when he was the number 2 overall pick. Now, we're talking about point guards here, Josh. Some interesting words coming out of the Nets' first-round draft choice from this season, Jonah Musa, who thinks that he can play multiple positions for the Nets, including point guard. He is a 6'9" forward, a scoring machine. Is this just one of these things that we're just talking about, guys, you know, pumping themselves up over the offseason? Or have you seen anything in any of the breakdowns of Musa that makes you think that, yeah, he can be a ball handler in a Ben Simmons-y type role in terms of being just the height of what he is? Or is this just something that might happen for two positions a game?
Yeah, you know, I love his confidence. I just don't really see it on film. He doesn't necessarily, he's a decent passer, but his handle is really not up to snuff. He's kind of a lanky, awkward guy at 6'9". Can't really dribble low to the ground. He's going to be someone that's more of a micro scorer off the bench, someone like a Jamal Crawford in a forward role, because he can bomb threes. He has great range. He can get to the hoop. He's fearless, but the point guard skills are not really seeing that.
One last thing before I let you go, Josh. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson suffered a groin injury in a game over in China. From all reports, it doesn't appear overly serious. Was there any concern that he's going to be missing any time of camp?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely going to be a little bit, and especially when you have a player like Rondae who does play very aggressively and kind of throws his body all over the place, those kind of one-off injuries can recur and nag throughout the season. And obviously, he's a guy that's had a lot of injuries throughout his career. His first season was cut short with that terrible ankle injury he suffered. So I'm assuming they're going to be precautious with him in camp and leading up to preseason, but all reports should be opening night against Detroit, he'll be good to go.
All right. Well, that'll be great to see the Nets out there at full strength, no injuries to worry about, unlike the multitude that did hit them last season. They are going to be interesting to watch. There's a ton of depth on this team. There's a lot of interesting young players to check out as well. So make sure you're checking out Josh and Gavin over on Locked On Nets throughout the preseason. And of course, when the NBA season kicks off, Josh, thanks for coming on Locked On NBA and discussing your Brooklyn Nets.
Yeah, thanks so much, Josh. Appreciate you having me, and go Nets.
The Locked On Network is expanding with college shows. Launching soon, shows for Alabama, Arkansas, Kentucky, Tennessee, and Florida in the SEC, Oklahoma and Baylor from the Big 12, and Ohio State and Penn State in the Big 10, and lastly with Oregon in the Pac-12, with more to come. Make sure you're checking out the new Locked On college shows that are coming real soon. We'll bring in now one of the hosts of the Locked On Bucks podcast. It's Eric Name. Eric, it's the quiet portion of the NBA season. We're all gearing up for preseason and training camp, but the Bucks were one of a few teams over the last couple of days to make a couple of signings, and I'm sure especially people in Milwaukee and people who are Bucks fans are pretty excited to at least see one of the names that they signed, and that being a Summer League standout, all first team Summer League player, Christian Wood. First of all, with Christian, he's had a few stops in the NBA before in Philadelphia and in Charlotte. But Bucks fans have been pretty excited about what they saw from Wood. Does he have a chance of actually making the roster this season?
I think it's the tough part of the question is that, you know, you look up and down this Bucks roster, and I think you would rather pay Christian Wood the minimum or, you know, a very short, small 2-year guaranteed deal or something like that than you would pay some of the other contracts on this team. I think you'd rather, if you are purely judging them as only basketball players, like, I think you'd probably prefer Christian Wood to DJ Wilson at this point. I think you might prefer Christian Wood, as cheap as he is, as opposed to $10 million of John Henson at this point. So all of those things you kind of have to think through in your head, but those to me aren't likely the realities of an NBA team, of an NBA front office, that I can't imagine that the team is going to essentially give up on a guy like DJ Wilson and cut him and sign Christian Wood instead. Like, I don't see that happening. So the only way I think he's got a real chance, you know, Tyler Zeller does have a non-guaranteed deal that if they wanted to, they could move Tyler Zeller and, you know, just get rid of him. They could cut him and instead go with Christian Wood. And I mean, I think there is a level to that that makes sense. I think, you know, Christian Wood does have more upside than Tyler Zeller. The only thing you kind of have to think through is they did give up a second round pick to get Tyler Zeller. You think about the sunk cost you got to kind of work through all of that. And also, I mean, Giannis played pretty well with Tyler Zeller. Now, is there any room for Tyler Zeller with Brook Lopez and, you know, hopefully Thought Maker finding his way in the NBA? Probably not. So I think it's for that final roster spot, to me, even though there are other guys that I think you would take Christian Wood over, it's going to come down to, do you want Christian Wood or do you want Tyler Zeller? And you got to decide between those two. And one of them has been an NBA rotation player before and the other one hasn't. So that to me is kind of the question, is it going to be Wood or is it going to be Zeller?
Interesting. Everyone loves upside and loves potential, and that's just, I think, what Christian Wood offers people and what the excitement is there. But at some point, you have to realize the production is actually over potential in terms of just being a guy who's going to produce at that level. And Zeller was solid at times last season. The other guy, Eric, that the Bucks brought in was a player. I'm not sure that the optimism was necessarily quite as high on Shabazz Muhammad, who did sign there after he was waived by the Timberwolves last season. What's the general vibe, I guess, across Milwaukee and Bucks fans for Shabazz returning to this team, and how was his tenure received last season?
There were not many people excited, in my mentions at least, when the Bucks decided to bring back Shabazz Muhammad. There was some concern that it was an actual contract as opposed to just a training camp deal for now. And I think people, I guess with Shabazz Muhammad, I just don't really see what his NBA spot is. we debated it on Locked On Bucks last week. Frank and I were going back and forth. Well, is he a 3-4? Is he a 2-3? Is he just a 2? Is he just a 3? Is he just a 4? Like, what is Shabazz Muhammad at this point? And, you know, there are certain things that he is able to do well. He is able to get to that left hand. He is able to throw in those floaters sometimes. And, you know, he is a stronger guy that he can kind of drive through people at points. And, I mean, he had moments last year. His 117 minutes for the Bucks last year were almost entirely productive. I think he ended the season with the best net rating on the team, which, again, just 117 minutes, and I don't think there's anyone out there saying Shabazz Muhammad should be starting over Chris Middleton or anything like that, but you know, he was effective last year. I don't think people were particularly excited when the Bucks first signed him. I don't think people are overly excited this summer with the Bucks signing him, but you know, he was effective in his role last year, so you do have to give him credit for finding a way to be productive in those ways. But his path to the roster to me seems even more unlikely than Christian Wood's, and it really just looks like to me kind of what the Bucks did last year, where they had 5 or 6 guys in for the final roster spot, all on training camp deals. And I think it was Gerald Green, Kendall Marshall, Brandon Rush. Oh, man. James Young. There's a couple more in there. I can't remember them all off the top of my head, but they did they went as far as you could, got as many bodies into camp, and you know, try to create as much competition as possible. And to me, that's what it feels like with Shabazz. Is, you know, he's a pro. He can come into camp, he can be good in camp and helpful, and ultimately he probably won't be on the team.
Of course, they did also sign Pat Connaughton for that similar sort of position this season. They've hopefully got a healthy Malcolm Brogdon, who was starting at the 2 before he went down with that quad injury. Tony Snell is still around. They drafted Dante DiVincenzo. So it's not like there's not a bunch of those guys who can fill in that, you know, back of the roster. Sterling Brown there, of course, as well, that can fill in that back of the roster position at the 2 and the 3. The biggest signing, I guess, that the Bucks made, Eric, over the offseason was Brook Lopez, who I guess ostensibly comes in and will take over that starting center spot that was held by John Henson for chunks of last season, and then Thon McCur in the playoffs. Lopez is a different type of center. Obviously, he's a guy that over the last 2 to 3 seasons has shown that he can step out and hit the 3 and be a willing shooter out there, a scorer, a 20-point-per-game guy during his tenure with Brooklyn. So how does Brook, who did struggle at times last season, wasn't used optimally with the Lakers, but comes to a new situation, but how can he, I guess, more importantly, help the key players on this team, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Chris Middleton, Eric Bledsoe? What does he provide that the Bucks have been lacking from that center position?
Everything. I just think through, you know, when you had John Henson, when you had Thon Maker, you had some things there where, you know, they had very clear weaknesses. There's just going to be certain limitations for those guys. There's certain things that they weren't going to do well. And with Brook Lopez, I mean, I would struggle to think of a better value signing this summer than Lopez, because when you have Giannis out there, the thing that makes Thon Maker so great is, you know, you can just put him out on the arc and it's going to spread the floor. And with Giannis, who can't quite shoot as well as he needs to yet, you got to find a way to get another shooter on the floor in the center spot, is why Thon Maker is always attractive. But, you know, Brook Lopez has actually done that and proved it and shown that he can be a true threat out there. So you have that. Then with John Henson, you know, Henson would be able to block some shots, and, you know, he would be able to do some things at the rim. And, well, he has high waists and, you know, he's a little bit on the thin side, so he'd get bumped around by bigger centers. And, well, Brook Lopez is huge. He's just a big man. And to me, you are still going to get some rim protection. You're just going to have a big body that the Bucks really haven't had in a while. They haven't had a big center that can kind of clog up the middle. Now, obviously, with Brook Lopez, you're gonna have to worry a little bit about his foot speed and whether or not he's gonna get switched on to any guards or anything like that because of the actions of other teams and, you know, what they're able to run him through. But at the same time, I think you have a guy that can spread the floor, which is ideal for Giannis. You have a guy that can block some shots, can be around the rim, and this Bucks team for, I mean, I honestly think it's a decade. I'm trying to think the last time I checked it in on Clean the Glass, but for a decade, they've been one of the worst defensive rebounding teams in the league. And one thing that Brook Lopez squads do, whether or not he's the one grabbing the rebounds, his teams tend to rebound very well. And I think it would be huge for this Bucks team to finally get some strength on the glass. And I think Brook Lopez helps out quite a bit there, even if it is just eating up bodies so that Giannis or Chris can come through and grab those rebounds. So to me, I just think it's a huge signing for this Bucks team. And I mean, Brook Lopez is 2 years removed from a 20-point season, and he's still incredibly talented. And you know, if you want to, you can dump it down on the block. And again, he's not going to be what he once was, and he's probably only going to play 25 minutes a game. But even those 25 minutes, you're replacing what was some of the worst play at center in the entire league last season with Maker and Henson, with, I don't want to say the best, but solid center play, and just moving 25 minutes a night from, I think you'd put it in the column of bad or underperforming to solid. I think it's going to be huge for this Bucks team.
Yeah, look, it is massive, and I think it is fair to put the center play in the column of bad when John Henson and Thon were out there last season, and Brook is a significant upgrade, even if he's not quite the same guy that he was when he was an all-star level player with the Brooklyn Nets a couple of seasons ago. I do think it takes this team a step forward for this coming season. The Eastern Conference clearly wide open. The Bucks are going to be looking to be right in that mix, and Eric's going to have all that for you across the off-season, the preseason, and the regular season, and hopefully the postseason with Locked On Bucks. Eric, thanks for jumping on Locked On NBA and discussing the recent news in Bucksland.
Thanks for having me, Josh.
Locked On NFL has now become Locked On NFL of Experts. Matt Williamson hosts Locked On NFL and has a brand new lineup. Every Monday, it will be the Locked On Network's local experts on the biggest stories. Then Mike Renner from Pro Football Focus joins every Wednesday, and ESPN's amazing Mike Sando joins on a Thursday. Be sure to follow Locked On NFL on Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts to get this amazing content. Lastly, let's go to Denver and speak with Adam Maris of Locked On Nuggets. The Nuggets are coming into the season, Adam, with a few question marks over a few of their players with some pretty significant injuries. The major one of those is the player they took in the NBA draft at number 14, Michael Porter Jr. We hear he had the back surgery last year, came back. Then after the draft, the second back surgery, and it appears that from all reports coming almost exclusively from his camp, is that the surgery has gone really well. But how much stock can we put into these reports? Is this just good PR from their point of view that this surgery's gone well? What's the actual status of Michael Porter that you're aware of, or that you're being able to glean from these reports?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, the perspective that I am taking, I would be surprised if Michael Porter Jr. was healthy to play really at any point this season, but certainly before, say January. I know it's just an arbitrary sort of timeline, but Michael Porter Jr. said basically all of these same things right after the draft. When he had his introductory press conference in Denver, never felt better, everything's great, and then a couple weeks later he had another back surgery. So I think that he is a person, in my limited experience with him so far, I think he's a person that sort of understands how to run a press conference and how to kind of say the right things. For me, I think Denver is every incentive to take their time with him, not just because of the injury and because they look at him as a long-term sort of prospect and a guy who long-term has more value than in the short-term. But not just the physical factors, but, Denver's a very good team and a playoff team, and adding a player of his caliber midway through the season can create its own complications. So for me personally, I am still of the opinion that I would be surprised if he played early in the season, and I would not be surprised if he didn't play at all next season.
So he's coming out and saying that he's feeling pain-free, but as you said, he said that already. He's still only doing light shooting. It does still feel like that it is a long way away from Porter. And as you mentioned, it's not like that they need him to step in and play 30 minutes a night. This is a team with a really solid starting five already, and he, depending on how things go, rookies often struggle, especially defensively. We all know that's an issue with this Nuggets team in general. So yeah, he's not needed to step into a large role already. Is there any feeling, Adam, that there is, a disconnect between Porter and his camp and the organization in terms of him wanting to push to be ready for the start of the season, and the organization maybe putting a handbrake on that?
I think you're very keen to ask this question because I had a source come to me at Summer League, and I was at Summer League, you know, prodding around trying to get some intel from different people around the league on him. And one of the things I heard from a person that who I trust to report on these types of things was that they suspect there will be some disconnect between the front office, who once again has no incentive to play him early, wants to take things slow, and Michael Porter Jr., who I think is a very confident, he's somewhere on that spectrum between confident and cocky or self-assured, but also just a guy who I've heard has an incredible work ethic and just belief in himself, almost this like spiritual belief, not just belief in himself as a player, but as in this person who's destined for this position for him. So I do think that is something, it's something I have my eye very, very closely on, but I have not seen anything like that just yet. But I do suspect Denver will be trying to slow play while Michael Porter Jr. himself is trying to come back as quickly as possible.
One other injury that is quite important for this Nuggets team, of course, is Isaiah Thomas, who had hip surgery, which he probably should have had, you know, more than 12 months ago before the start of last season, but he's had that surgery. Any word on where he is in that recovery and we're expecting him to be, you know, full go by the time preseason kicks off?
The Nuggets have not released an official timetable, but it does sound like he will be ready to go at the start of camp. If not in full participation, I do believe that they are counting on him to be ready at the start of the season. So, the Nuggets have been very tight-lipped with official timetables for return. If you remember, Paul Millsap wasn't really even spotted around the facility until about 2 or 3 days before he was cleared. So they're very good at keeping these secrets. But from everything I'm hearing off record, it sounds like they're planning on having him ready at the start of the season.
You bring up Paul Millsap, so I want to draw a really long bow here to go into a segue to the last thing I want to ask you about, and that's that Nuggets beat reporter Chris Dempsey a couple of days ago came out and says he expects that Trey Lyles, well, not expects, or thinks as a bold prediction that Trey Lyles could become the Nuggets' fourth leading scorer. Now, of course, Lyles stepped up in Millsap's absence last season, but to expect Lyles to be the fourth leading scorer behind Jokic, Jamal Murray, and Gary Harris would mean that he's getting a lot of minutes at the expense of someone like Paul Millsap. There's also Will Barton, there's Isaiah Thomas in the mix there. How likely is that? It seems completely unrealistic to me that Lyles is going to take this step up and be playing 26, 27 minutes a night. I can't see how that's happening, but it would be great if he was able to take that step forward for Denver, of course.
Yeah, that was an interesting article, and I found some of the stats that he threw out there to be rather interesting. I don't know that I agree with his assessment. I think Trey Lyles is at a point in his career where he does have some talents that he's figuring out which ones are valuable and which ones are not. But the bigger issue is what you alluded to already. We know Nikola Jokic is going to play 33, 34 minutes, somewhere in there. I mean, a lot of minutes. Paul Millsap, I suspect, will play 30 minutes a night. Mason Plumlee plays both the backup center and some power forward position. They've got Juancho Hernangómez. So they've got some guys there. I don't know where, when everyone's healthy, how much time Trey Lyles is going to get. But I do think he's a good speculative play because there were months of the season last year where he was one of the main scoring options off of the bench, and you plug him into different lineups and he was really, really dynamic. But there were also months where he wasn't very impactful. I would suspect that he will have another up and down year because, once again, his role and his minutes are not necessarily clear to me at this point. So I don't imagine they're clear to the coaching staff, and it'll be one of those things that sort of evolves throughout the season. So I would disagree with my colleague Chris Dempsey a little bit, even though I do think he will be, just from a skill standpoint, the best he's ever been.
This Nuggets team, clearly, Adam, is pushing for the playoffs. It's going to be really interesting to see how everything fits together with a new starting lineup, with a new backup point guard. Lots of real intrigue here in Denver as they push for that playoff spot. Adam will have that all covered over on Locked On Nuggets. Adam, thanks for jumping on Locked On NBA with me.
Absolutely. Thanks, Josh.
There you have it, another episode of Locked On NBA in the books. Make sure you are checking all the other shows across the network, whether that's your favorite NBA team, your favorite NFL team, your favorite baseball team, or, as you heard earlier, we're starting off the Locked On College Network, so your favorite college, you're going to have shows for those coming in the next couple of weeks as well. Follow me on Twitter at @RedRock_Bball. Go and check out the shows of all the hosts we had on today's show and the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network at Locked On NBA Net. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.